This is BBC One. And this is BBC Two. And this is Television Centre. And this is a commissionaire on the main gate. And this is the main gate. And this is Vision Maintenance. And this is Prez A during the strike. And this is the Noddy symbol. And this is the symbol of peace and goodwill. And this is Benidorm, where I went on holiday. And this is, what is this?
Meet the gang, 'cause the boys are here. The boys to entertain you. With music and laughter to help you on your way. To raising the rafters with a hey, hey, hey. The songs and sketches, they jokes on and you. With us about, you won't feel blue. So meet the gang, 'cause the boys are here. The boys to entertain you.
Now listen, my loyal public. I appreciate that the last two podcasts have been, possibly, longer than the contest they were describing. But that's only because you deserve the full, unedited, X-rated arse that goes on behind the scenes of, quote, Europe's favourite television show. However, for the next 3 months up to Christmas, there's an extra large bag of goodness, yeah, that's the word, that needs the Mr. Phil treatment.
And your dehydrated writing team.
Yes, and my dehydrated writing team as well. I mean, of course, 1996. You see, back in the dark times, it was not a bed of sunshine, roses, tickety-tock and social media hypo, dear me, no. There was a time when this contest was on its knees, and not in a good way. The world had decided that being Irish was a thing, and naturally, the Eurovision had to follow suit. 92, 3 and 4 were all won by Ireland, and 1995 was won by a Norwegian group, albeit with 29 words and an Irish fiddler. There were rumblings that the contest couldn't survive another period of Celtic dominance, and so things had to change. The agreed way forward was to allow everyone who wanted to enter a song to do so, complete with national selection and everything, but, and here's the kicker, a non-televised selection round would be held. Everyone, including Norway, who won the thing last year, so qualified, would constitute a jury of 8 people. 4 music professionals and 4 normals, or whatever passed for normals, to sit on Wednesday the 20th and Thursday the 21st of March 1996, and a digital audio tape of all 29 songs will be sent around Europe. Research tells me that the juries listen to the songs in ISO country order 3 times, twice on the Wednesday, and a further listen on Thursday morning, you know, just in case they needed reminding or as some form of cruel and unusual punishment, and voted immediately after that, with each juror giving 1 to 8, 10 and 12 points to their top 10 songs. They were all then added up, and the one with the most votes got the jury's 12 and so on down. You'll notice this is different to how a jury actually votes in the Eurovision proper. They gave each song a mark out of 10 and added them up to give the scores, but it didn't really matter that much. When all the 30 countries had faxed their votes into Geneva, it's still 1996, remember, they were added up and the top 22 would get the call back saying, "Don't panic, you've not wasted your money on anything." This meant, of course, that 7 broadcasters would have spaffed money up the wall by either selecting a song internally or, as has actually happened, producing a national televised selection show for an audio-only qualifying round, which they then failed to get through. And they still had to broadcast the television show that they weren't in and pay for the privilege. Before we dive into it, it might surprise you to know that nothing like this has ever been suggested or completed ever again. Luckily for me, it also happens that my favouritest Eurovision country of all would be the first one to be knocked out in by ISO country order. Fucking Germany. Germany had been going through the Eurovision roller coaster in the last few years, not eased by the fact that they had absorbed the 5 East German lender and their broadcaster into an established broadcasting system. Since then, their form had been decidedly poor, with figures of 18, 16, 18, 3, and most recently a 23rd and last place with this pile of dog shit. SFB in 91 and MDR since 1992 had been the German broadcaster tasked with producing the national final for seemingly no other reason than they were based in Old East Germany. Their new overlords at ARD, and no, I'm not pronouncing that full name, decided that the experiment was well and truly over, and they couldn't arrange a piss-up in a brewery between them, and decided to give it to an established Western German broadcaster, one whom last organised a national final back in 1965 and came plumb last in the Eurovision proper, Norddeutscher Rundfunk. Clearly, the omens were not promising. NDR decided to reinstate the national final, which MDR had scrapped, presumably to save money, and hosted a spectacular in the Friedrich-Ebert-Halle in Hamburg, just to show that real people were interested in the contest after all. They called it Ein bisschen Glück, a bit of luck. And an opening song is sung by all the contestants, which, it could be argued, is better than any of the 10 finalists. International, umso mehr. Wir brauchen alle ein bisschen Glück. Für einmal Oslo und zurück. Wir brauchen alle ein bisschen Glück. Für einmal Oslo und zurück. The four most successful songwriters for Germany over the last 20 years, John Frankfurter, Hannah Haller, Michael Reinecke, and Darth Maul himself, Ralph Siegel, are given a place in the final automatically with their song. The other six come from the 737 entries that have been submitted, which have been whittled down by a 9-member expert jury. We'll get to the top three in a moment. Firstly, I want to take you to the song that ended up finishing in sixth place. A song that was about the new and groundbreaking for 1996 medium of the internet. If you've never heard of Surf and Multimedia by the Eurocats, you're clearly A, stupid, and B, been living under a rock for most of the last three decades. It predates the seminal Email to Berlin from 1999 and is yet even more hideous. I really can't stress this enough. You really must search this out on YouTube in order to appreciate the full horror of this performance. So to our top three then, and in third place was this. Entitled Echoes, sung by a Romanian panpipist, Dalia Cernătescu, and the godlike figure of German folk music, Angela Wiedel. From all of my YouTube fact-checking, Angela is a very popular yodelist, and is always on the old television, it says here. She'd even made a song about Mother Teresa, for heaven's sake, so she's closer to God than I am. Sadly, she looked like your prissy aunt at a wedding wearing a very unflattering blue dress. She also had to rein in the old yodeling, which clearly pissed her off, as she looked incredibly angry throughout the entire performance. The runner-up was much better and sung by a Michael Bolton impersonator. Tell me, how am I supposed to live? I'm at that age where everyone looks like someone else, so sue me. It's actually sung by André Statter, who would go on to have a successful career as a Schlager singer. No, the actual German proper Schlager, not your manufactured Scandi pop nonsense. It's actually a rather filthy song about taking Jeannie's virginity, according to the English translation at any rate, but made to sound lovely in that sickly sweet, insulin-inducing kind of way that very few countries can produce. So then, in a field of yodeling, Eurocats and cherry-picking, yes, indeed, yes. What better way to bamboozle your viewership than to put a 26-year-old hairdresser making his first television appearance out front and centre with a song composed by the writer of this. Für alle hier, die den Regenbogen auch im Dunkel sehen, und die But, and here's the twist, not in that style, O Dear Me No. The random songwriting wheel chose the style banging techno for this one. The song makes literally no sense, but if I had to describe it from the lyrics, it's about Leon being blasted into space and looking back on the Earth saying that he loves the planet and the countdown is on. Presumably to the end of the world, but even that's not obvious from the lyric. What is obvious is the fact that Leon, whose real name is Jürgen Goebel, so no wonder he chose a stage name, is camper than a row of pink tents on stage throughout the performance. He minces around the stage doing the sort of choreography where you can literally see him counting to 8 in his head. He's clearly learned the song by rote, as he doesn't want to go off script at all throughout the performance. Somehow, he got nearly 38% of the 140,000 votes that the Germans threw about with gay abandon, pun intended. The jurors of Europe only had the studio version on their Memorex C90 to listen to and missed all the visual shenanigans. It could only muster 24 points from all of Europe, and 10 of those came by the way of the United Kingdom to finish down in 24th place. Not enough to qualify for the first time ever. Leon wouldn't bear the brunt of any backlash. He had a successful career, and even tried to come back to the Eurovision 12 months later, wearing seemingly the same costume and singing a slightly better song. Spoiler, he didn't win. Germany as a whole didn't take this result well at all. ARD originally refused to show the contest at all, but relented and showed it on delay, where it promptly got only 370,000 viewers. The EBU were aghast as well. Their biggest contributor was not going to be at its showpiece event. A couple of sets of rule changes later, and Germany could never again be relegated. Hasn't helped them to send better songs, though. Denmark are the next cab off this very short rank. They've been going through their own up-and-down phase over the last few years, though nothing to rival Germany's. A considerably way too low 9 points in 1993 meant that relegation followed. They were back in 1995 with this piece of confusion. Which finished in 5th place with 92 points, so hopes were high. Sadly though, it seems that DR chose to plot a course of, well, we might not get into the final, so why bother having a spectacular? And so, instead of the usual 10 or 11 songs, they invited 5, count them 5, composers to enter a song. Also, they seem to have had a bit of a brain fart when it came to how the song would be actually chosen. Last year, they reintroduced the juries and sacked off the televote in a complete turnaround from most other broadcasters around Europe, and it seemed to work well for them, gaining that aforementioned 5th place. However, for 1996, they went back to televoting, clearly needing the revenue stream. As there's only 5 songs here, here is a little compilation mixtape I've made.
Boy, I'm the beautiful man.
In third place, we have an aging rocker with a rather underpowered rock song. Very recently, at time of recording late, Peter Belly was, apparently, a good singer in the 60s, and his band, Les Rivals, warming up for the Stones and the Beatles. It might be Les Rivals, but who cares? Sadly, the song is neither rock or indeed roll, but has nods to what it could have been with a singer that actually cared about the performance. Because Peter looks completely nonplussed singing it in his overcoat. The Danes were not impressed either. The runner-up was Rhoda Kinder by Mark Lynn, a song that starts with a familiar introduction. But just before Monty Norman starts legal proceedings, it completely stops, and then changes gear. It's a light take on a Bond theme sung by Mark, who is himself a light take on Harry Connick Jr. As rip-offs go, it's a bit lacking on the old tune, talent, or indeed anything Bond-esque. Oh, except a woman dancing behind a screen like she should be in the title card of Live and Let Die. And his stigma-inducing mustard-yellow suit should have turned any self-respecting voter off there and then. So what did the sport for choice Danes plump for? Well, this. Kun Med I, translated as Only With You, was sung by famous in Denmark stage actor Martin Loft. Well, he'd been in Chess and Les Miserables, you know. And famous from DMGP 1992, Dorther Andersen. The song is a predictably Danish plodathon talking about how they walked into each other's arms and that they can get through literally anything but only with each other. Kun Med I, they call. Keeping with the theme of the top three here, it's not very exciting. It does nothing special musically. There's no choreography to speak of, with the two singers looking doe-eyed at each other as the band plays the tune. In fact, come to think of it, only Martin connects with the camera, and Dorther explicitly tries not to look at you, with that typical Scandic dead-behind-the-eyes look we've come to know and hate, when she does actually connect with the camera. However, somehow, this song, which registers a gamillion on the On Europe Blandometer 9000, gets me every time and I can't tell you why. I guess it's because it's sung nicely, despite being twee as fuck, by two experienced singers. The Danes were clearly on my wavelength as well, because this got significantly more televotes than the other four songs in the final combined, with just over 9,400. And off it went to that audio pre-selection, where it only had to beat seven other songs. Sadly, the jurors of Europe were not as moved by this song as the Danes and I were, and it probably sent them to sleep after a heavy liquid lunch and they forgot to vote for it. Yeah, that's bound to be it. It got a high of 5 from Sweden, but very little else, to end up in 25th place with 22 points, and whilst only 5 points away from qualifying, that feels a lot further away than it sounds. The Danes would rebel in the most Danish way possible by sending a song about a man being in love with a telephone operator the following year. The lesson here? Don't piss off the Danes.
Med opvisning, hallo?
Ja, hallo, det er Kai. Kan jeg snakke med hende på søde?
Hvem er den søde?
Ja, stemmen i mit liv. Go!
Jeg tænder på dig.
Ja!
Og hvad I gør dig?
For!
Du er så langt fra mig.
Jeg går og føler mig lidt...
Hungary had only recently started on their short Eurovision journey. They failed to qualify in 1993, before scoring the first 3-12 points of 1994 before not winning it, and then scoring a mighty 3 points the following year. Safe to say then, they didn't know their arse from their elbow by the time 1996 came round. What they did know was that they had to at least enter a song, and to aid them in that process, they staged a 14-song national final in their main TV studio. The songs were linked together by a continuity announcer, István Vergő, in his own little studio because presumably he wasn't paid enough to get on the main stage.
You're watching Grampian Television. It's now 10 o'clock and time for the news from ITN.
The same could seemingly be true of the songwriters because of those 14, four of them failed to score any points with the five juries that were giving out the scores. And having listened to all 14 of them through the miracle of YouTube so you don't have to, one can instantly wonder what pain the juries must have gone through. It's almost as though Hungarian telly had moved lock, stock and barrel to, insert random northern English city working men's club, for an open mic night. You know the type of thing. Anyone can come in and sing anything and, usually, either get booed off the stage or hit with Rotten Tomatoes. The latter would have livened proceedings up considerably, because, spoiler alert, there isn't an up-tempo one amongst them. In third place we have song number 10, Volak Meg, sung by someone called Renata. Again, imagine my disappointment when Renee didn't appear with her. What she did have, though, were pan pipes at the start of the song.
Aznap hűvös lett a szél, csendben elborult az ég, mikor szótlanul az út.
And an annoying habit of not looking into the camera, which may or may not have been her fault. What definitely was her fault was her lack of tuning on the high notes. And she just stood there in a black ensemble and sang the song with no emotion at all, apart from a seemingly relieved sigh at the end of it. The runner-up was this.
Nem sírok ennyi az életem. Hallgass, ne szólj, nincs baj semmi sem. Megtaláltál némád ölej át.
Sung mostly by Anita. She was a proper and well-known star in Hungary who'd been singing since 1984 and had done various records and festivals over the years. This was the most professional-sounding song of the night, if still boring as all hell, and almost as predictable as some of my jokes in this podcast, but at least she knew how to look at the camera. The juries of Hungary, though, were charmed by the vocal stylings of a man that, even with my dodgy eyes at the moment, looks like a cross between Martina Navratilova and Billie Jean King, but I'm assured that John Dalhousie is definitely all the man. Born in 1953 in Budapest and having started a musical career at an early age, his big break was winning the Dance Song Festival back in 1971, which was also his breakthrough year, as all of his four singles that year went gold in Hungary. He then proceeded to do a tour to communism countries in the 1970s and 80s, hoovering up accolades like the 1975 East German Singer of the Year and the 1988 Cuban Song Contest Best Composer Award. It's clearly ensuring his star is known around the countries he would have been allowed to go to. He'd been churning out the albums as well and was rightly the biggest star on show this night. The song's lyrics were very strange indeed. The first verse is a weird mashup of Email to Berlin and Conquistador, and then telling us why we're all here to start with. When the North Star casts a wink towards the moonlight across Europe, an urgent message cries. The troubadours of Europe's cities come together. TV, radio, sound out everywhere. Dublin, Oslo, Paris, Copenhagen airwaves tingling set the stage. Cellos heard in London, Budapest, Prague and Berlin, Moscow, Sarajevo. Thanks for that, John. All you need now is Praia, Angola, Mozambique, Goa and Macau and you have a line on the Eurovision bingo card. The song is basically him wishing he'd do spectacularly well with this song and that fortune should shine on him. Unfortunately, what fortune did was shite on him from a massive height. He only gained 26 points from around Europe, which tied him with Finland for 22nd place. However, the countback rule meant that because Yasmina scored an 8 from Greece and John could only manage a 7 from Romania, they were out. They'd be back though, but they wouldn't get Eurovision for many years, and because of their government currently, they are resting from the contest. Israel next, and they too have been going through a rather cyclical Eurovision cycle for the last few years, something that, as I write this, I've realised has afflicted quite a lot of these non-qualifiers for some reason. They went big again at the IBA by hosting their Kadam Eurovision show as a selection, but fate would interfere with proceedings. On the morning of the show, there were suicide attacks on a bus route in Jerusalem by some Palestinians. They killed 19 people and injured 8 more. The IBA shouldn't, in all honesty, have run a light entertainment show on the national television channel, bearing in mind what had happened, but, as we know, Eurovision is a massive source of national pride in Israel. So they broadcast their show, but, according to research, they kept crossing to the Shaare Zedek hospital for updates. So given this subdued atmosphere, it's rather surprising that we start this look back at the top three with the song that ended in 6th place, because it's mental. And yes, that's an actual thing. Moving swiftly to that top three then, in 3rd place we have a tie. Yay, more songs to write about. This is clearly Israeli songwriters' attempts at being Celtic with all the panpipes and the violins and the two singers that seem never to have met before that Monday night in Jerusalem. It takes an awfully long time to get going, and then it goes into a typical Israeli hands in the air at the end kind of song. In fact, I wrote that last clause without looking, and the backing singers do indeed clasp each other very tightly, and I'm sure that if they could, they'd have joined the singers front and centre. The other song was this. In which Tamir Tsaidi thinks he's been transported to a Tel Aviv night spot. Well, at least the backing track does. He just looks like he's being forced to sing. Either that, or he's hearing how bad the backing singers stroke dancers are in his ears and wishes he was literally anywhere else but there. It's also safe to say that of the 6 on stage, he's not the natural performer, and it's proper choreography by numbers. To complete this shit show, the girl backing dancer's skirts have maps of the world on them. Modern interpretation of Ince and Isbiz, if ever I saw one, and no, I'm not playing it. Ince and Isbiz, Ince and Isbiz, Boyardu. The runner-up was slightly better. The Israeli version of a gay boulevardier comes onto stage and croons his way through this song and sounds more mainstream Mediterranean rather than what Israel is in the minds of real people. You can imagine this song being played as you eat souvlaki and drinking ouzo in Rhodes or Thessaloniki rather than it coming from the place that let me sit at an expensive Chinese restaurant in downtown Tel Aviv on Shabbat. The sweet and sour was both. This is just sour. So surely then the winner would have had to have been at least semi-decently written and competently performed? Well, no. Especially on the count that matters in an audio pre-selection. The singing. Or lack thereof. Hey, hola. Yes, harbe chadashot, ani roa. Harbe regashot, zo haderech. Leoto makom, leshaket veshalom. Galax Ben-Lulu, real name of Galax Bell, has the kind of voice that can not only shatter glass at 40 paces, but also make everyone's ears bleed, a skill that would have allowed her in the Champions, had they have been real. In real life, if there is such a concept, Galax was born in 1973, and had been participating in talent shows since the age of 12 in Hazor HaGalilit, where she'd been born and raised, and had won three in a row. Blimey, her life sounds like an edition of New Faces.
You're a star, you're a star, a Lamy suit and a new guitar. And I know that you'll go far, cause you're a star. You're a star, superstar.
When 1996 came round, she was, like almost all Israelis, serving in the IDF, and her partner at the time, one Lieutenant Colonel Eyal Modani, wrote the lyrics for Shalom Olam, with the music composed by Doron Wittenberg. She bounds onto stage and bounces through the 3 minutes and seems to be the only one of the 12 contestants looking like she's actually enjoying herself. She's on stage with a drummist who can't mime for shit and two guitarists who are wearing headset mics that make me think that they've escaped from the nearest call centre and have just wandered onto stage. To me, this song is one where the song is a whole lot better than the talent of the singer. And as the 3 minutes goes on, Galax's voice tends to get shoutier and shriller. I suspect her boyfriend hadn't envisaged the song to sound quite so amateur. The jurors of Israel's 7 regional centres disagreed with this assessment, and it gained 70 points out of a maximum of 84. Sadly though, there was no time to hone the performances and ensure that Galax would actually be in tune, because the audio-only final was 3 weeks away. I've heard the recorded version of the song, and it sounds a lot less like the vocal equivalent of nails scraping down a blackboard.
Hey!
The IBA made a giant misstep here. It's said that instead of sending the recorded version, which may well have got 27 points, they were the only broadcaster to send in the live version, which doomed it to not qualify. In fact, it was so badly received, it ended up well off the pace, scoring just 12 points from the juries to finish in 28th place, next to last. Galax would produce one more album in 2001 before retiring from the music industry completely. The IBA will be forced to sit out 1997 due to the contest date clashing with Holocaust Memorial Day. They'd be back with a vengeance in 98, though. North Macedonia are often described in this house as the unlucky losers of the Eurovision Song Contest. In later years, they'd be afflicted by the so-called Macedonia rule, a rule specifically designed to prevent them from qualifying direct till finale. Namely, they have enough neighbourly support to get through in 10th place, but we won't let the song that finishes 10th qualify, and we'll send Charlotte Pirelli Tyres through instead, because that's cool and normal. This current version of Batshittery may, or may not, have something to do with the Greeks. The two countries were at the start of a rather childish squabble over the name of the country, and, as such, Greece were blocking anything Macedonian internationally, so it's perfectly possible this is the actual reason why they didn't participate in 93 when they were entitled to. It's also more likely as well that 2 months wasn't long enough to get a song ready, but details are rather sketchy, so I chose the conspiracy theory any day. What definitely isn't known is why they didn't take part in 94 and 95, presumably again, a little from column A and a little from column B. Anyway, what did or didn't happen is immaterial for this podcast, and we're focusing on their first proper attempt. They decided to go big by organising Skopjefest 96, and, in the grand tradition of current Eurovision, they had 2 semi-finals to whittle down the 29 songs to a more manageable 20 for the final night. I'm sure those 9 poor souls were crying into their alcohol, or laughing up their sleeves because they didn't have to face the juries and the audience in the hall again. Who can say? What we can say with certainty is that of these 20 finalists, 3 of them scored naught. The business end of the voting starts with this in third place, sung by someone you should recognise.
Can you sing a voice that tells me more than a city? Can you sing a thing that more impossible is me? That means that you should think he has a single guy.
And just in case you didn't recognise them, it's Eurovision alum Tiana Tedesca, she of the 2014 Eurovision semi-final, with this. But back in 1996, she was entering her KD Lang phase by wearing one of her cast-off suits and singing the Macedonian equivalent of freeform jazz. Cleo Lane, she is not. The runner-up was this. Sung by Maja Odzalewska, maybe. She had won the Skopjefest back in 1994 when it wasn't a Eurovision pre-selection, and she'd been a persistent trier in that iteration by coming second, third, second again and sixth in the past. This time round she sings this big ballad song with the soaring strings which makes my heart swell, and I reckon it might well have got the 27 points needed to get to Oslo, but alas, the juries chose a different course. Again with the freeform jazz. But this time, it's brilliantly executed by Calliope. She'd been around the block, it's safe to say, before Skopjefest came on the scene. She started singing back in 1976 and had, her bio tells me, loads of hits in the Balkans, both as a soloist and as a member of the group Calliope, so good they named it after her, with her soon-to-be husband Romeo Grill. Yes, that is his real name. I suppose it's better than being called Bernie Inn or Wimpy, I suppose.
Come on over to my place. Hey you,
hey you,
we're having a wimpy, we'll be shaking.
Anyhow, by 1996 she was in need of a comeback, as she'd been out of the limelight since 1988, and what better way, she must have thought, than to burst onto the stage and sing a song written by her own fair hand entitled Samo T, Only You. It's big, but not too big. It's ballsy, but that could be Calliope looking fierce as all hell whilst singing it, and it's definitely a show tune from a production like Cabaret, where the lead would sing her heart out at the denouement of a particularly tough breakup scene. I cannot deny, dear listener, that I've always loved this song, and I think I always will, because it speaks to me. It's a woman who knows her craft and this song inside out, as shown in the semi-final performance, where she riffs off it just that little bit too much, but no, she has to rein it in when it really, really counted. It won by 82 points, and she gets to sing it in front of an audience of adoring people in Oslo. Or so any right-thinking person would have thought. However, those jurors couldn't see her perform the arse off this song, and could only hear her, and even I have to admit it loses something without seeing the raw emotion. It scored a pathetically low 14 points from 5 countries to finish down in 26th place. Bearing in mind some of the songs it beat, I reckon there's an argument that this would have done decently in Oslo. Calliope wouldn't be deterred, though. She'd finally get to the Eurovision proper in 2012 with Sir Noe Bello and finish in 13th place, their highest position at that point and their second highest overall at time of recording. 4 years later, she'd be back again, but, as befits the unluckiest nation in Eurovision, she'd miss out on the final by one place.
Yeah.
Romania have a possibly unmatched place in Eurovision history. No, it's not the fact that Ova's a completely slappable twat. And no, it's not because they had a literal wanker representing them. It's the fact that they are the only country in Europe to score a zero in a semi-final and not only fail to get out of both pre-selections, but finish last in both of them. Well, that's the spoilers out of the way, and frankly most of the introduction and ending, so let's get on with the top three, shall we? Background information is, thankfully, limited, so we're going to have to rip the piss out of the songs, which isn't hard to do. In third place, we have Crajina Madara singing Secunda. She sits at a piano wearing what looks like a set of dungarees, whilst also sporting a pair of NHS specs, singing into a microphone that's placed just that bit too high for her, so that when she sings, her neck muscles strain. The runner-up was our old friend from 1993, Dina Dragan. Well, I assume it was her. She has, in the intervening 3 years, stopped looking like Theresa May and started looking more like a Poundland.com cotton crossed with Blondie. She's singing this song in a trench coat with spangly buttons, so I'm not entirely sure what her styling or consulting was all about, but it was definitely wrong. She's singing, for the avoidance of doubt, O Lacrima d'Estrella, which I think means crying stars. I was certainly crying by the end of it. She doesn't so much sing this as, well, perform isn't quite the right word to use here either. I guess this could be a song that you experience through the fact that you're watching her interpret the song. Yeah, that's the word, interpret. From what to what, I'll leave that to Google Translate, but it's certainly a challenging watch, especially at the end where a street urchin comes onto stage to give her some flowers. In the world, no, not them, and is cued in a few seconds too early. Tugs on the trench coat as if to say, here's your flowers, missus, but Dida ignores her and finishes the song. She ignores kiddies. She's gone up in my estimation all of a sudden. The winner is an absolute stinker. Let's start with the lyrics, shall we? The title, which I'm not going to mangle, translates as Prayer for World Peace, so you know the kind of thing that's coming up. However, inside the first verse, it sets the tone with, way too many mothers don't see their sons again today. Where are my parents, the child will ask. It gets no happier in the next stanza either. Where are you, God? Where did you go? A pointed question, I'm sure, that needs raising. And it's better done by Croats, Bosnians, Slovenes and Israelis at this precise moment in time, though. The message is totally lost by the styling choices of Monica Rangel, a woman who would get to the Eurovision proper 6 years hence with this. And, coupled with that, she would have the honour of sharing a bus with your podcaster. However, here she looks like an awkward sixth former singing in a smock at the school prize giving because they were desperate for someone to fill the time. She's not helped by the pleading for votes or possibly world peace backing singers, dressed in a contrasting black to her white, giving it heavy shoulder and hand movements right out of the 80s, which is clearly where Monica's hairstyle still is. It's called Eurovision, after all. Despite all of that, the European juries, of course, didn't actually see any of that. They still had the misfortune to hear it, and that was quite enough, thank you. I'm guessing their three run-throughs just confirmed what we all knew. It was shit on a stick. Personally, I think it was lucky to score anything, let alone 11 points. The Maltese jury, clearly drunk, thought this song was the fifth best song of all 29 and gave it 6 points. That's just fucking mental. A 4 from Germany and a 1 from Ireland meant last place was nailed on. They'd go away for 1997, presumably out of embarrassment, but it would take them many more years and many more failures to warm to their task. Russia may well be persona non grata in this contest these days because, well, war and stuff. But back in 1996, they were one of the new kids on the block. They'd entered the contest with two of their biggest stars, Yudif in 1994, and everyone's favourite Russian, Filip Kirkorov, in 1995. For 1996, then, the broadcaster whose turn it was, RTR, decided to have a televised selection to see if they could actually, you know, do a bit better than last year. RTR held their festival on March the 2nd in the Shabalovka Studios in Moscow, but not in a standalone show, oh dear me no, but as part of Programme A, hosted by Yudif. Nice to see you getting some work, I guess. The winner will be chosen by an expert jury, because you can trust expert juries in Russia, headed up by everyone's favourite news agent, Barbara Knox.
Have you noticed I've only had one other sentence this month? What a fucking liberty. Anyway, not everyone is going to get that reference. It's actually Alla Pugacheva, but you never see her and Rita from the cabin in the same shot.
That 1996 final is on YouTube, but has surprisingly few views, and I can't think why. Things started ominously when the jury were presented with bouquets of flowers before they'd even started. Almost in a, you are going to vote the right way, aren't you, kind of way. Much as I'm tempted at this point not to give Russia airtime on this pod, it's an inescapable truth that they participated. So, in third place, we have this.
Извините, трудовой народ, что я такой молодой обращаюсь к вам. Поможите добраться до замечательного города Евровидения. Это у нас такая единственная возможность.
By the group Nogu Svelo, Cramp in the Leg. They are, arguably, a proto-Kreisi Radio, or Winnie Pooh on sedatives, because they're what passed for anarchic. The lead singer is dressed in a blue tracksuit with some sort of paper hat on his head in the colour of the victory ribbons of Russia. He knows what he's up to here. The song, Moskalovsky Romans, is a discordant noise with a lot going on stage, but the audience are a whooping and a hollering for this one by the end of it. I wouldn't say it's the out-and-out joke entry, but it's definitely subversive in a modest kind of way. The runner-up was this. The Turkey, sung by Alina Kuzmina. To my ear, it sounds a bit like a Pound Shop Tony R. It's trying to be all big and ballsy, but the mix with the backing singers lets Alina down an awful lot in this performance. Musically, it does build nicely as it goes, but it's a very clinical performance of a song that has no soul or, indeed, a proper thought-out ending for the song. As for her styling or consulting, no, don't tempt me to do it in Russian. Her black bodice doesn't go with her white suit. Your winner would be the following song in the draw, Ya Eto Ya, sung by Andrei Kaczynski. It's not the most dramatic of performances of what is, frankly, quite a ploddy and rubbish song sung by Leo Sayer's fatter and more russified older cousin in his PJs or a morning shroud, not sure which. It's the kind of thing you could imagine playing in the background as you shop for mutton or butter in the local Sainsbury'ski in Novosibirsk. It's the very definition of background muzak, and it just goes on and on and on. Clearly Andrei was boring the jurors into submission, because that's the only clear explanation I can find for this song. Either that, or he bribed all 16 of them, and I don't know which is more likely. It's another song that just ends suddenly, which is a blessed relief to all and sundry, I can tell you. In the interval, Yudif sung a bit, as did some other people, before they showed Big Phil's latest pop video because he couldn't be asked to turn up for this shit, and despite me hating every bone in his body, I can't blame him. The winner was announced and the show ended. Andre looked surprised to win. I sense he wasn't the only one. Unfortunately, the European jurors ignored it totally. Apart from in Switzerland and, for some reason I can't explain without wondering, if they were all paid in large sums of caviar, the United Kingdom, both of whom gave it 5 points. It got a 4 from Estonia and that's it. 14 points. By the 22nd of March we had our 23 songs. All we needed now was to wait a few weeks for them to turn up for the jurors of Europe and the rest of us to laugh at. We'd not be dissatisfied.
You have been listening to the first in a 3-part saga that we like to call Eurovision 1996. As has become customary, Mr. Phil would like to remind any of you litigious types that he claims absolutely no copyright over the music clips and is playing them purely for the lols. Don't try and sue him. He's still poor. This particular podcast was written, composed, spoken, recorded and pre-mixed like a cheap Bacardi and Coke by Mr. Phil on his own this month, as he has given his Why Can't He Do Every Month on his own. We've loved the break writing team the month off. I swear to God, he only writes things for me when he can't be asked. Don't panic, this copyright notice is nearly over. The words are copyrighted to Mr. Phil, who is sitting at his desk in On Europe Towers in a sunny October of 2023. You can get further podcasts at www.oneurope.co.uk or wherever the fuck you find your other podcasts. Search On Europe Reviewcast. You know it makes more sense than going for gold.